it's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we'll talk to a Wisconsin beer expert about some of the best winter seasonal brews around the state. First, it's our weekly look at the top stories in national news. President Trump condemned former White House advisor Steve Bannon today, saying that Bannon has, quote, lost his mind and had little to do with his campaign or presidency. Also, with a possible government shutdown coming up, congressional leaders are meeting today to hammer out a new spending plan. And Senator Orrin Hatch announced his decision to retire from Congress later this year, joining a growing list of Republican lawmakers who won't be seeking re-election. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of Steve Bannon's criticism of the president as revealed in an excerpt from a new book earlier, and the president's response, the White House response? Do you think that could put President Trump's base at risk for him? Call in now at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Scott Wong is a senior staff writer at The Hill, where he covers Paul Ryan and House Republicans. He joins us from the U.S. Capitol building. Scott, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me back, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, and of course, it's New Year week, always a slow time in national politics. Oh, wait, there's a lot going on. And we're going to start by talking about a thing we didn't know was going to be a thing to talk about, this excerpt from a book by Michael Wolff, quoting Steve Bannon, talking about Donald Trump Jr., Jared Kushner, and others. What was the big revelation that got this response from the White House?
So the big takeaway from this new book that will be out within a matter of days was Steve Bannon, who was the chief strategist in the White House for President Trump, a man many credit for helping to get President Trump elected during the campaign. Steve Bannon went on the record with Michael Wolff and described a 2016 campaign meeting involving two of Donald Trump's family members, Donald Trump Jr., his son, and his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, as well as the campaign manager at the time, Paul Manafort, meeting with Russians. And Bannon called this meeting unpatriotic and treasonous. Of course, this meeting is sort of at the heart of this broader Russia investigation that Bob Mueller, the former FBI director, is taking a look at, to see whether or not there was collusion between the Russians and the Trump campaign in 2016. So this is a major blow to the president and to the White House. It's coming from what many had said was one of Donald Trump's closest allies at one time, Steve Bannon.
And President Trump is saying, no, he wasn't. In a statement that came out today, he said, quoting here, Steve Bannon has nothing to do with me or my presidency. When he was fired, he not only lost his job, he lost his mind. End quote there. And the president went on to say Bannon wasn't a part of his victory, really, and went on from there. So what do you make of the response from the White House? This has also come up in a press briefing with Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Well, the response has been expected. Trump and the White House, including the press secretary, are now taking aim at Steve Bannon, as they do with all major critics of the administration and the White House. And so Steve Bannon is no different in this case. But the reality is that Steve Bannon was in many of these meetings and strategy sessions. He was one of the earliest folks who had discussions with then candidate Trump about possibly running for president. He was President Trump won the White House. Steve Bannon was elevated to a position that was seen on equal with the chief of staff, Reince Priebus. If you remember, that announcement of both Priebus and Bannon was made on the same day in, I believe, the same press release, just sort of a symbolic understanding that these two men would be seen as equal members of the White House and representing very different wings of the Republican Party. Obviously, Priebus, the former RNC chair, who represents more of the establishment wing, Steve Bannon sort of represented the grassroots conservative movement that helped put Trump in the Oval Office to begin with.
Both of them out of the White House now. And some people are looking at Steve Bannon's motivation here and saying he's maybe settling scores with Jared Kushner in particular and Don and Ivanka, Don Jr. and Ivanka Trump, who he was a White House rival with. Is this a game we're going to be playing a lot as this Michael Wolff book comes out, trying to figure out what was motivating the people who told him stuff?
It's hard to say what his motivations are. Remember, Steve Bannon, he wants to remain relevant. This is one way that he can remain relevant. He also has a news organization that he continues to lead, Breitbart News. And so this could be a way for Bannon to continue to stay in the mix and in the headlines. And today is certainly a clear example that Bannon is in the headlines.
Is this a tempest in a teapot in a way? I mean, Robert Mueller's not going to look at a Steve Bannon commentary for, to guide his prosecution here. He either sees actionable crimes here or not. Does this really matter?
Well, I think it matters in one regard, is in that Steve Bannon was dealing directly with the president, dealing directly with top members of the campaign and key family members. He may have heard or seen things. And I know that Steve Bannon had been on the list that some of the Russia investigators in the House and Senate wanted to call before the committee. I think what this does in Steve Bannon sort of sticking his neck out there and talking about treason and collusion, I think this accelerates that process. And maybe we're going to see Steve Bannon hauled before these committees and to hear his side of the story a lot sooner than maybe we would have.
We're talking to Scott Wong from The Hill. He's a senior writer there. We're looking at the big national stories in national politics. Let's turn away from this Bannon story in that book. I think we're going to be hearing a lot more about that. Government shutdown may be looming again in about 3 weeks. Scott, there was a short-term deal before the holidays bumping us back to, about 2 weeks from today. What is the current status?
Well, I think the current status is that a shutdown is possible, but unlikely. I think that's where we can say things are today. As we are talking, the four top congressional leaders, Paul Ryan, Nancy Pelosi, Mitch McConnell, and Chuck Schumer, are meeting in Paul Ryan's office with two top White House officials, the budget director and the legislative affairs director. Trump has dispatched them to Capitol Hill today to sort of restart formal budget negotiations in this new year. And what they're looking for is sort of a two-year deal to set spending levels through the 2019 fiscal year. Once they do that, they can then go ahead and pass a broader spending package that would fund the government through the end of this fiscal year, which is September 30th. Now, the big hang-up is that Democrats are insisting that protections for so-called dreamers, the young immigrants who are brought to the country illegally as children, that they are shielded from deportation. And that is a big problem for Republicans. Republicans are trying to separate the immigration issue out of the budget talks. Democrats want the immigration issues to be part of these budget talks. And so that is sort of where this impasse stands right now, really not overspending, but more about immigration.
And do I have this right, Scott? The president has weighed in. It sounds like he'd be okay if immigration came up in this, if the wall was part of it, a border wall with Mexico.
Yeah, he's brought back the wall issue. Once again, it sort of dies down and then he tweets about it and it's back in the mix. And just days ago, he tweeted, he said, I can support these DACA recipients. I can give them, I can shield them from deportation. But in exchange, Democrats have to give me the wall. And what he wants is border funding for this wall. I think Republicans are saying, many Republicans are saying the same thing. They would like to see more funding for border security. What that looks like, I think, is sort of remains to be seen. The other question is, what is the definition of a wall? President Trump obviously has his vision of a concrete or metal barrier, but other Republicans are saying maybe it's a fence. Maybe it's some sort of high-tech device, and could that be considered a wall? And so I think that's maybe where the negotiations are heading, is what is a true definition of a border wall.
And you said these are negotiations. Republicans have majorities in both chambers. It got narrower today in the Senate with Doug Jones taking over for Luther Strange, a Republican being replaced by a Democrat. Is there a path where Republicans could go this alone using that reconciliation process we keep hearing about?
They would not use reconciliation for for these budget and spending issues. That's sort of why we're in this position to begin with, and why these talks are bipartisan in nature. That's why Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer are in the room, is because for these massive spending packages, usually you need Democrats to come along with the Republicans. There's simply not enough support within on the House side for a Republican-only bill, and especially in the Senate, to overcome a Democratic filibuster, they're going to need about eight or nine Democrats to go along with any sort of major spending package, and that's why these talks are bipartisan.
We're talking to Scott Wong, senior staff writer at The Hill, looking at the top national news of the week. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Should this spending bill in Congress include a deal on immigration for the DREAM Act recipients, DACA? Should it include funding for the wall with Mexico? And what do you think about the retirement, the announcement by Orrin Hatch that he's going to retire as senator of Utah, the prospect that Mitt Romney could run for his seat also? There's President Trump's tweets on North Korea. What do you make of that? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation with Scott Wong from The Hill. We're looking at the top political news of the week in the nation's capital. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. John is with us in Janesville. John, hi.
How are you doing?
Good. What do you think?
I think that if they're trying to get money for the budget to build the wall, and they said, oh, they got money that they can do that, how come they want to take away Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security? Because they said they spent too much money on giving the tax cuts. If they can afford those other things, I think they can afford to keep Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security going.
John, thanks a lot for the call. And Scott, this is a live issue. I think you've written some about this. What does Congress do next? If you ask Paul Ryan, it's reform to programs like Medicare and Medicaid, possible cuts there.
That's right. Speaker Ryan has been talking to the president for a number of months now about what comes next after this huge tax reform success. that had been one of Paul Ryan's, that had been really Paul Ryan's number one priority in Congress, and he got tax reform done. Now he's talking about welfare reform and most likely Medicaid reform. I think they understand that Medicare and Social Security would be too heavy a lift during a crucial election year where both majorities could be up for grabs. But even so, Mitch McConnell has poured cold water over any sort of those welfare or entitlement reforms. And so we're seeing a real disconnect between the two Republican leaders on Capitol Hill. Mitch McConnell, obviously, who has a much narrower majority with only really one or two votes separating himself from being put in the minority. And so he's a lot more cautious. He'll be a lot more cautious this election year. He wants to tackle more bipartisan things like a major infrastructure package. Paul Ryan sees, you know, this as a golden opportunity. He says, well, let's continue this momentum. We got tax reform done. We may not have these types of majorities in the White House for another generation or so. Let's go after some other issues that are continue to drive the cost of government, like welfare, like Medicaid.
John, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Scott, speaking of that Senate majority, one person who won't be part of it next year is Orrin Hatch of Utah, longest-serving Republican there in the Senate. President Trump had said, hey, run again, really want you to run again. Let's give a listen yesterday at saying he's not running again.
I've authored more bills that have become law than any member of the Congress alive today. I played a central role in the creation of the modern generic drug industry, the passage of the landmark Americans with Disabilities Act, and the confirmation of every current member of the United States Supreme Court.
A long career, a long record in the Senate. What does this mean now that he's not running, Scott?
Well, the first takeaway is that this creates a huge opening for Mitt Romney, the former presidential nominee in 2012, the former Massachusetts governor who has called Utah home for a number of recent years. He has been eyeing a seat in the Senate, specifically Orrin Hatch's seat, and has been in this sort of delicate dance with Orrin Hatch, trying to nudge him into retirement so that he could run for his seat without being too forceful. And now that Hatch has taken it upon himself to retire, I think we're going to see an announcement from Romney in the coming days or weeks. And the reason this is significant is because Orrin Hatch had been an outspoken proponent of President Trump. Mitt Romney, as we know from the last 2 years, has been one of President Trump's biggest critics. He's been part of this Never Trump movement. He delivered a scathing speech at the University of Utah during the 2016 campaign, calling Trump all sorts of names, including a fraud and a phony. And so Mitt Romney, I think, has realized, you know, if he can't play the sort of name-calling game and keep up with President Trump, then maybe he can do something legislatively to perhaps stop President Trump's agenda. And the way he can do that is from the United States Senate.
Yeah, going back to that 2016 campaign, after some of Romney's comments about then-candidate Donald Trump, here's a listen to Donald Trump on the campaign trail talking about Mitt Romney.
He's a choker. And you know the truth, I hate to say it, I hope we don't have too many in the audience. Once a choker, always a choker. And I was nasty about it. So now, as retribution, Donald Trump shouldn't run, pop, pop, pop. And he walks like a penguin onto the stage. You ever seen? Like a penguin.
So this could be an interesting campaign if the Republican president of the United States is or isn't going to back the Republican candidate for Senate in Utah.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, Trump sort of helped fudge the election in Alabama. He endorsed at first Luther Strange, who went on to lose the nomination, and then he endorsed Roy Moore, who of course lost to a Democrat in Alabama for the first time in decades. And so it'll be interesting to see what the president does in this case. He has at times, you know, they've been, mortal enemies at times. And then, of course, there was that sort of that dinner that they had after President Trump was elected president in New York. And there was talk of maybe President Trump would extend an olive branch and make Romney his Secretary of State. Ultimately, he pulled back any discussion of that, and Romney has since been pretty critical of the president. And so they've had this sort of on-again, off-again relationship. But I think Romney, if elected, if he runs and if he's elected, he will fill a void in the Senate that will be missing, especially given that Jeff Flake, another huge President Trump critic, will be retiring. And, you know, we don't know the fate of Senator John McCain, another big Donald Trump critic who is battling brain cancer. And we haven't seen McCain back in Washington, I don't believe, this week. So Romney will fill a void in terms of those never Trump critics.
Talking to Scott Wong from The Hill, looking at some of the top stories in national politics. Back to your calls now with Chris in Madison. Chris, hi.
Hey, I gotta say that President Trump is a direct result of Mitch McConnell and other Republicans not actually following through on the promises when we elected him. And so I agree with Paul Ryan, although he's been dragged to this position, kicking and screaming. We need to actually make some meaningful reforms. Two entitlement programs now while we have majority. And if Republicans do not actually follow through on the things that they said they would do, then they will, you know, reap the benefits of that inaction and be voted out of office.
Chris, thanks a lot for that call. Scott, Chris saying the Republican base wants reform of Medicare and Social Security, and Republicans better deliver or they're in trouble.
Well, yeah, that's an interesting point, and one that I've heard quite a bit. Of course, as I mentioned before, the Senate and the House sort of have different objectives, at least politically. You know, Paul Ryan has a sort of 25-seat advantage in the House, whereas McConnell has like a 1-seat advantage, and so things are a little bit more tenuous for Mitch McConnell than for Paul Ryan. And Paul Ryan can afford to take bigger risks, I think, than Mitch McConnell. And McConnell realizes that, and that's why he sees bipartisan infrastructure as sort of the best bet after they pursued very partisan issues of tax cuts and repeal of Obamacare. And so I think, one thing we're going to be watching this weekend is Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, and Donald Trump are going to be sitting down at Camp David this weekend trying to figure out map out their strategy for 2018, figure out what issue comes next, and what does this election year agenda sort of look like for the Republican Party.
Just a quick take, Scott, since you cover Paul Ryan. We haven't talked to you since a news story saying that, hey, a lot of people who know Paul Ryan say he's talking about maybe not running again. He has said, don't believe the hype, but he hasn't definitively said, as I understand, that he is running. What are you seeing?
Well, we don't know. I think the only people who truly know are probably Paul Ryan and perhaps his wife and family. You know, what I can say is that he's facing a very difficult January. There are a number of issues, including, you know, most prominent, the spending issue and talk of a government shutdown, as well as the immigration issue in the DACA kids. And so that, coupled with quite a few other outstanding issues, is creating a real headache for Paul Ryan. We thought December was going to be the sort of make-or-break moment for the Republican Party and his speakership, but Congress decided to punt things down the road for another month, and so here we are with a deadline of January 19th. How he handles this issue, I think, will be a real test of his speakership and whether or not he's...
We'll leave it there. Thanks to Scott Wong, senior staff writer at The Hill, and our weekly look at national politics. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time.